This is the way it feels to move through summer in Lululemon. Iconic align softness without the front seam. For our smoothest look and feel ever, summer won't know what hit it. Stretch your limits in the non-stop flexibility of the new Lululemon Align No Line Pant in select stores and at lululemon.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest of my podcast this week is Ruben Poukhan, CEO of Goodgist.
We don't try to build a very custom solution for a very custom problem. We try to look at the problem and say that, okay, so we are not trying to only solve for, let's say, a gas turbine failure. How do we build that technology so that now, instead of just only solving for data coming out of gas turbines, it can also look at data coming out of smart cars, right? How can it also handle data coming out of, let's say, smart televisions, right? And things like that. So the focus has always been in trying to understand the problem and try to generalize so that it can solve more business use cases without having to like recreate something new every single time.
This is Ruben. He's a serial entrepreneur with more than two decades of experience building technology products to solve real-world problems. He's written books about AI and holds several patents in this field. He was part of the first data science team from Yahoo, collaborating closely with co-founder David Filo to leverage data to address complex business problems. In 2005, he co-founded BigC.com, India's first vertical search engine employing patented technology. This company was then merged into market leader MakeMyTrip and DataRPM, a pioneering enterprise AI platform for industrial IoT, which was then acquired by Progress in 2017. In 2019, he co-founded GoodTrade AI, an asset management and investment analysis platform centered around generative AI. Most recently, he co-founded Goodgist, an AI startup for upskilling and research that tackles the challenges of scaling corporate skills development. And their mission? To organize the world's knowledge and make it universally accessible, conversational, and digestible in bite-sized chunks on demand. Their belief is that this creates a significant moat for their clients against competitors in today's fast-paced landscape. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Ruben to my podcast. We explore the challenges of continuous learning in today's fast-paced technology environment. He takes us through his first principles for making strategic bets and why he opts to take a platform approach rather than a point solution approach. Last but not least, he explains his lessons for niching down and verticalizing his go-to-market approach around his platform. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, how he accelerated traction by packaging his horizontal platform around highly valuable and business-critical problems. Secondly, how he goes about successfully serving the mid-market and large enterprise companies in their own unique ways. Thirdly, his approach to identifying new value possibilities in the market that are worth building solutions for. And lastly, how he makes decisions on what to invest in and what not. Well, hi, Ruben. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Tan. Really appreciate having me here.
Yeah, well, it's a topic dear to my heart. And I think over the last 5-6 years of podcasting, there's been a couple of conversations around this topic. And I think it's a very important one because it concerns all of us. Before we start talking about your company, GoodGist, one question about you. What drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
So I think I've always been excited by solving problems which are human scale issues where there is no other way of making it better other than using machines to automate a lot of those, right? So those kind of problems have always drawn me, kept me excited, and which is also what we are doing at GoodGist today that keeps me excited because it's not a human scale problem, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's, it's actually the reason why I started the podcast in the first place. I didn't want to talk about automation issues, scale issues, but more about augmentation issues. So like, how can we as humans do a far better job with the use of technology? How can you create 1+1=3 type scenarios? So we're like-minded here. Well, then to make the switch to your company, GoodGist, what was the problem that you saw early on that was screaming for a solution like you're developing today?
Yeah. So I have been in the technology field for almost over 20 years, and specifically in the field of AI and machine learning, which has gone through a tremendous change in the past 2 decades, right? So it's almost like on the edge, things move fast. You have to adapt fast, right? Now we are at a stage in which it's not only about technologists who work in the field of AI machine learning who have to really be on the edge, but now AI machine learning is like ingrained into almost everything that we do, right?
Yeah.
So everyone today has been forced to become like a continuous lifelong learner, right? And not just to upskill themselves for work, but even to learn how to use technologies in everyday life, right?
Yeah.
Now, the challenge that this brings in is that when things move fast, the time that we have available to learn new things have also gone down. I mean, there's just so much that we can do during the day, right?
Exactly.
And that becomes even bigger problem for anyone who is actually working in the technology field, because for them, they have to learn technology for work as well as outside of that, right? So the time is even more crunched.
Yeah.
So the traditional method of learning doesn't work anymore because nobody has time to go through like a 8 weeks course to learn about a new piece of technology.
Yeah.
And even when someone does that, because there is so much of things going on, retaining that information and applying it for the job becomes challenging, right? So which means that even if someone has gone through a course and maybe got certified, right? When it comes to applying it and using it on a day-to-day basis, so they have to fall back and do a search at that time, right? So what does online learning is helping is that helping them identify what to search when they have to apply it on the job. Now, that is, again, not efficient because when you're searching, you're, again, having to aggregate that information on the fly, right?
Yeah.
Now, this brings a related problem to learning, which is knowledge management, right? So as an organization, how do you build that knowledge base when you have to apply anything for a job, right? So if everybody is searching for information, but nobody is recording it and maintaining it, which means that if a person has to search and access it today and they have to refer back that information maybe a month later, they have to repeat the same search, right? Or others in the team who are trying to access the same piece of information have to repeat the same, right? So the industry stat says that on an average, an employee in a knowledge-based industry ends up spending like 1/3 of their day searching for information, right?
Still now, the same.
Yeah. Now, when you look at the cost that this indirectly impacts, right? The loss of productivity when like one third of the day is just gone in searching. And the thing is that it feels like work, right? So for someone who is actually searching for information, it feels like you are doing work when actually it's not, right? Sure. So those are the problems that we faced firsthand in the companies that I have worked in the companies that I have founded as well, right? So this has always been a problem that we wanted to solve.
Yeah.
Now, with AI being at a stage where it is, right, it has made it much easier to solve this problem. And it's not a human scale. I mean, you cannot solve it by more people or putting in more hours, right?
That's at the end also the problem, I guess, that the working population is actually shrinking. So the work has to be done by, getting more out of people than it actually has been in the past. But but I hear sort of a vicious cycle. Yeah,
it
we
is.
Have to do more. We have to do better. We have to all the bars have been rising for us, and then we still have to keep up. So I completely agree with you that traditional trading methods are really falling behind. If you look at it from that perspective, so what did you? What did you create? I mean, if you look back at, you've been building this now for some time. What is the change that you're making here to solve this problem in a completely different way?
Yeah. So the more important thing when it comes to learning and applying it at work, right, or managing that knowledge, the critical thing about learning is that it's very personalized, right? And that is where a lot of the generic learning platforms become not effective, and why most people have to do search, because they are trying to find very specific use cases, right? Or learning which is very specific to what they're working on. So just to give an example, so generative AI is now a big thing, right? And everybody is trying to learn. But when you look from an engineer's perspective, right? When they look at generative AI, they have to take into consideration their use case. What technology stack are they using? How will it fit into the realm of generative AI? When you look from a business user perspective, they're not really interested in the technical aspect. They're more interested in how would generative AI help solve their business problems. So that learning, you cannot give a generic course saying that, hey, take this course on generative AI, because it's very specific to the business requirement, to the individual requirement, to the industry that that individual is working on. And this information has to be presented in smaller chunks, because again, nobody has the time to process a lot of information, right? So it's about learn enough to apply it on the job and move on. So that becomes harder to do it manually, because the rate at which technology is changing, A, you cannot create personalized course at individual level by just creating it manually, right? Second is that you cannot keep updating that course on a daily basis as the rate at which technology is changing. So that's what our platform does. We are an autonomous learning and knowledge management platform where anyone can go and specify what are their learning needs, what specific role that they are playing, right? So what is their proficiency level? How do they intend to use that learning on the job? And the AI will dynamically put together a learning content and a learning path, which is very, very tailor-made to that individual for their requirement. Now, what it does is that it gives very specific piece of information that someone can directly apply to what they're working on, right?
Nice.
And the second component is basically being able to do specific research, right? Because today, when you are researching for technology, you're researching for competitors, you're researching about customers, right? So again, you have to go and spend a lot of time doing it online. And that is, again, counterproductive, right? So what we enable is that, again, it's on the same extension of learning, is that you specify what you need to research and for what purpose. the platform will aggregate that information and give a tailor-made report, right? For that individual, so that they can make decisions faster and move on with the job, right? So that's the whole idea, is that how can we deliver massive productivity gain, and how do we empower employees to really control what they're learning and how that learning gets applied in a practical sense for the work.
Fascinating. Yeah, I mean, I saw on your website that you also work with like authority expertise. Does that mean authority expertise from within the company, or do you also then take it outside?
Yeah, so there are two levels of authority. So one is that when the AI generates the content, so it refers to sources which are relevant in the context of the learner, right?
Yeah.
It automatically, I mean, it does what a human course creator would do, right? So they would take the requirement, they'll identify what are the relevant sources or trustworthy sources of information, right? From where the content can be referred to and can be created. So the AI just mimics that. It identifies for a particular requirement. So if it's, let's say, a financial domain person trying to learn about something, what sources are more relevant for that individual, right? Or a healthcare domain person trying to learn similar things, but maybe the sources are different for that. So it will establish the authority of the source dynamically. And then the second level becomes the expert validation, where it can be either an in-house subject matter expert who can look at what the AI has put together and say that, okay, this is great, or they can edit it and make it more accessible, or it can be an external subject matter expert who can validate and certify that.
Yeah, just to ensure that it doesn't start to hallucinate and come up with things that might sound very reliable, but they aren't.
Yeah.
So that brings me also to another question. Have you found industries where this applies, where this is much more of a critical problem to solve rather other industries? I mean, is there anything in the segmentation side where this gets more demand and is more desirable to obtain?
Yeah, so one of the upcoming use cases that we are seeing, and we are working with some of the large software companies, is that most of the software today is being sold and implemented through partners, right?
Yeah.
Now, there hasn't been a solution that enables partners to do that in an autonomous basis. So any company who is engaging partners have to put together a large team to support the partners, right? Because again, you cannot impart a generic tool training, right? It has to be very specific to the use cases that the partners are working on, right? Now that becomes a challenging thing because you hit a human scale issue pretty quickly because you cannot put together a large enough team to cater to too many diverse partners, right? And only a large organization can afford that. Most mid-size or smaller software companies who want to grow through the partner network cannot do that, right? And the stat says that most successful software companies, almost like 60% or 58 to 60% of their revenue come through partners. So that creates like a chicken or egg problem, right?
Yeah.
How do you grow big enough so that you can support large number of partners who can generate that revenue, right? So that is where the application of an autonomous learning platform comes into play, because now, based on that individual partner requirement, the platform can generate very tailor-made courses that they can themselves use, or if they're working on an implementation problem, right?
Let me make a small interruption here. Ruben just made an important remark that underpins how they gain rapid traction in new markets. Instead of creating a platform and tell everyone that it's a platform to help people in any organization learn faster, they zoom in into a very specific but highly valuable and critical problem and solve that by packaging differently. That way, they speak with far more context and clarity to the market, and with that, hit a nerve that they'd never touch if they'd communicated in a more generalized way about their product. And beyond that, They can also charge radically different prices for basically the same thing. So beyond go-to-market efficiency, this also aids higher profitability. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. Their curiosity is highly developed. They focus on the essence, and with that create new value possibilities that are in high demand and paid a premium for. And you can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
So say a partner comes in and says that, yeah, I have to implement a particular piece of software for a banking customer in the European market, right? So what kind of regulations I need to be aware of? How should the software be implemented? How should the data be aggregated to make sure that it's compliant, right? So getting those step-by-step guidance, the AI can do a really good job of that. So which kind of enables a software company to autonomously bring in or empower partners, right, to execute on it without having to invest on a large team. And this is a critical problem for most software companies because managing partners is fragmented and is a big problem, right?
Exactly.
And that we are seeing as a pretty strong emerging use case on a platform.
I can completely agree with this. And you're in the right space with that. You speak the language. On this journey, you know, because like you say, you've been in this space now, in the AI space, and you've seen it develop for the last 20 years. Last couple of years, of course, it has completely started to grow exponentially in terms of taking off. What has been a toughest decision so far? What has been a very important decision that you took in that space in order to create something that's defensible from a differentiation perspective?
So I always feel, and this has been my focus throughout, is that it should be the problem first and technology second, right? So it's not about creating technology just because it's cool and it can do amazing stuff, right? Unless that technology has been applied the right way to solve a big pain point, it's a fun piece of tool, right, at the end of the day.
Okay.
So along my journey, that has been the focus. My previous startup was a company called Data RPM, where we were providing enterprise AI software for industrial IoT. So this was around the time that industrial IoT started happening. Manufacturers were deploying large sensors across their system, right? Now it was machine data that was coming in, and most of the businesses, they had no clue how to handle machine data because they have not seen that previously. Now that, again, is a critical problem, right? So we started with that, saying that, yes, now a lot of machine data is getting recorded, stored. It's expensive to do that. But then how does businesses can leverage that data, right, to solve practical problems, right? So what Data RPM did is that we helped to automate that process of collecting that data and applying it to problems like predictive maintenance, right? So how do you determine the failure of a gas turbine or a component in a gas turbine well ahead of time, right?
Yeah.
And things like that from the machine data that was coming in, right? So where it'll automatically identify what is the normal operating condition of a turbine and what looks like an anomaly, right? And then it helped in also doing supply chain optimization for those parts, right? How do you do inventory planning and things like that? So, I know it's a long answer to your question, but the thing is that the focus is always on where is the pain point, right? Where are the human scale issues that are coming up, and how can technology solve that, right? Rather than saying that let's build a cool piece of technology and then try to figure out what problems you can solve it.
That's a very good answer. Glad you said so. And I agree. There's too much technology being built just for the sake of, okay, this must be something that solves something, and then nobody wants it. But I completely agree with you. No, it's the for those particular scenarios, those use cases, the moment you go that deep, it creates context. And with the context, there's actually something that can, that you can assign as an expensive problem, critical to an organization to solve. And if that's the case and you solve it like no one else, then people are happily paying a premium for that. Talk about it a lot, by the way. About that question, okay, there's a problem. It is highly valuable to solve. It's critical to solve. Are you doing anything? Have you used any frameworks or what do you do specifically for it to solve it in such a way that you start to exceed expectations? Because, of course, there can be others that come up with the same problem.
Yeah.
That recognize it. How do you create something from your perspective that stands the test of time, that you can actually convince the customer about that this is the best thing they can do for solve it?
Yeah. So, and a great point that you made, mention about frameworks, right? So there are two ways to solve a problem, right? So either you solve it in a very, I mean, in the technical term, more hard-coded way, where you are actually implementing a very custom solution to a custom mm-hmm. problem, right? The other one is that you actually build it more like a platform where you understand the problem, but you build the platform in a way which is more generic, where it can then be applied to similar problems or adjacent problems, right? So we have always taken that approach, right? So we don't try to build a very custom solution for a very custom problem. We try to look at the problem and say that, okay, so we are not trying to only solve for, let's say, a gas turbine failure. How do we build that technology so that now, instead of just only solving for data coming out of gas turbines, it can also look at data coming out of smart cars, right? How can it also handle data coming out of, let's say, smart televisions, right? And things like that. So the focus has always been in trying to understand the problem and try to generalize so that it can solve more business use cases without having to like recreate something new every single time.
How does that help you?
So it helps us expand to other use cases faster. It helps us, not just be a niche, a vertical player. It helps us expand into multiple domains, right? So when we started with Goodgist, right? So we started looking at saying that, hey, I mean, a specific problem, right? So saying that what kind of learning needs that a particular type of company has, right? Then we said that, yeah, rather than trying to solve for a very specific technology, a very specific learning and development need, how can we create a platform that is generic enough so that people can technically learn almost anything and the AI can put together a solution for that? Yeah. So although we are now applying it specifically to technology companies to solve either their internal learning or their partner learning problem, but the technology that we have built is generic enough that it can be applied to someone wanting to learn how to do digital photography, for example, right? So it doesn't stop us from really catering to a lot more learning needs in the future, right? That's so it
makes you more resilient as a company as well, I guess. Because, you know, at some point, the demand will maybe diminish in one area and it will start in another area. That's where you can make a shift. From a go-to-market perspective then, how is that work for you? I mean, are you following more of a vertical approach whereby you deliberately try to speak the language very specifically of the people that have the pain? Or do you apply a more generic and horizontal approach?
Yeah, so as a early stage startup, we cannot be too horizontal because it dilutes the whole value proposition and then it confuses the end users as well, right? Exactly what's the problem that we are trying to solve. So we tend to go vertical first and then make sure that we have actually solved. And when we say vertical, we are not like really bucketizing us into a domain or a very niche. So, I mean, for us, we cater to technology companies, right? So that's, and software companies, which is pretty broad in itself, right? Mm-hmm. But having said that, once we focus on technology companies and software companies who are, let's say, trying to build a partner network or a partner ecosystem or trying to sell through that or manage partners that, right? So that becomes like a niche. It becomes a focus that industry understands well, the pain point resonates with most people. And then from a go-to-market strategy as our early stage, it helps us enter the market better from that perspective.
I can completely understand it, yeah. Because I mean, now it's now you can kind of target your language at the real problem, which is, you know, you want to scale your partner network, and there's all kind of problems that you can talk about very specifically in that domain, which will attract the right type of people. Yeah.
Correct.
And yeah, there's much more at stake also if you make it more context specific. Nice. So let me see. Yeah, one more question around the go-to-market then. Have you seen that this problem gets a higher value the moment you go more up in the market, or is it mid-market, or is it low end of the market?
The problem, I would say it's mid-market and up. Mm-hmm. Companies who are smaller, they are trying to solve other problems, right? Or they are trying to go direct to the market and learn. And at some point, once they reach a stage where they are saying that, yeah, I mean, now it makes sense to expand through partner network rather than doing direct. So that is where they start transitioning there. Mm-hmm. So the kind of challenges that, let's say, a mid-market company has in managing partners is very different than what a large company has in managing partners, right? Both are equally important, and we tend to focus on both. So we are working with large companies and large enterprise companies as well as mid-sized companies as well. So it's about solving their specific needs, right? About how they are looking at building their partner ecosystem, yeah. Right? So for mid-sized companies, it's more about onboarding partners, right? And getting them to learn the technology fast, right? Whereas in terms of large enterprises, they already have existing partner network. So it's more about managing the partners. How do they keep them updated with new releases? How do they make them more efficient with customer implementation? How do they help them solve specific challenges that they face in their implementation on a day-to-day basis? So the problem statements are slightly different for mid exactly. and large market, but yeah, we tend to focus on both at this point.
Fascinating to see that you say that, because I mean, I like the level of specificity. It is definitely, there's nuances, and these nuances matter. And that's about, being able to address that. Now, I get so many discussions going on companies that have a horizontal solution and say, well, the moment we start to niche down, we miss out on so much. And here's a good example about, you know, that you just highlighted, okay, I'm going technology, I'm going companies that go partner, and now I've got the nuance of mid-market and large companies, and the problems that these companies need to solve that are critical to them are radically different. If you can solve those, you know, there's markets and there's demand to come. So where do you see your fastest growth?
So we are early. So would say that maybe the data here is not statistically significant to say where the growth is. We are seeing traction at both places, right? Okay. So the key difference, and to be honest, why we cannot measure which one is more growth is because it's very different. A large enterprise is a big account, right? But they move slow, right? I mean, the nature of the business, right? It's
exactly.
It takes time to do that. Whereas a mid-sized company is a smaller account, but they have lesser complexity, I would say, right? So they can move faster. Now, when we measure growth, are we looking at like a revenue growth versus traction growth, right? So those are the two things that we have to balance. But I would say that at this point, we are still learning from the market, and we'll maybe figure out where the growth path is better for us, and then we may even focus a bit more on that segment.
Exactly. Now that's indeed a wise thing to do, to have your eggs in a couple of baskets and see which one works best. But I completely acknowledge the fact that large enterprise is, you have to go through so many hoops and loops and departments, procurement, legal, et cetera, security. Looking at the hour, looking at the clock, two more questions. I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, which is about the 10 traits that define those software companies that we start talking about and keep talking about. Are there any specific things that you do in your company to create software that people start talking about for you that is perceived as remarkable?
Yeah, so I think people like to talk about software that they find easy or enjoyable to use, right? And now I think usability, user experience is a big part of that, right? So how do we make complex technology available very, very simply, right? So how do we mask the complexity of the technology behind the scene, right? But expose a very simple interface, right? And now, with ChatGPT and everything coming in, right? So people are more used to the conversational interface, right? But going back to how we have always looked at solving problems, so we started providing a conversational and a natural language interface to business intelligence and data analytics, right? Back in 2012, when I was doing my previous startup, Data RPM, for enterprise IoT, because we said that, it's a complex field. Most people are anyway struggling to figure out how to use the data, so we don't want to make it more complex by exposing a very heavy UI, which requires a lot of configuration and things like that, right? So it should be a simple box where people can type, right? How are my machines doing? And where are the problems happening, right? And it just gives the result. And a lot of people have also said that it's very hard to make something very simple, right?
It is, yeah.
And that is what we try to focus on. I can't say that we are already there yet, but that's what, as a company, that we have always focused on, that how do we simplify the problem, right? And hide the complexity behind, right?
I think that's the point, hide complexity. I mean, in my days at Unit 4, we were always talking about, the best UI is no UI. It just happens. And I think this is part of that as well, hide it. Because I don't think also that people talk about, the usability is great, what it means to them. And maybe this is the way they translate it. But I mean, I can actually do my job, and it feels seamless.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what they find worth making a remark about, because that's what everybody wants. Last question then. From your history and being an entrepreneur, founding a couple of companies, what are the tidbits of wisdom that you could share here, that do and a don't?
Yeah, so... it might sound like a repetition of what I've said earlier, but these are things that I sincerely believe in, is that it's always about solving the problem, right? Rather than just creating a company for saying that, hey, let's experiment with some cool technology and try to find a product market fit, right? That a lot of people talk about. Now, I would say that a product market fit from that terminology is a little bit too loosely defined, I would say, and it's only applicable when someone just starts with saying that let's build a technology first, right? So when you look at a problem first and try to build a product, of course, no product would be perfect from day one, and there will always be iteration. And there will always be fine-tuning that is required to solve the problem, right? But if you start with a core problem, right, mm-hmm. doesn't matter how big or how small that problem is, but it is a problem that exists,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And there are people who are struggling with that problem, and you try to solve that. It's always a good way to get started as a business, right? And I mean, most businesses won't probably run into issues or fail by solving a real problem. I mean, so I think that has been the biggest learning, and I've learned it the hard way along my journey, which is why my belief on that is much stronger. That once you have identified the problem, you just have to keep at it, right? So it will take iterations, it will take that, but once you're solving a real problem, it eventually ends up becoming a good business as well.
Completely agree. I think these are nice words to finish with. So where can people go to find out more about GoodGist or to say hi to you?
Yeah, so I am on LinkedIn, Twitter, available, and you can go to our website, goodgist.com. There it has also our profile link. So reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Happy to connect anytime.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for sharing the story and the journey. And we'll keep an eye on how this is progressing.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ton, for having me. It was a great conversation, and it's a complete pleasure. Pleasure is entirely mine.
Okay, thank you very much. And this ends my conversation with Ruben, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Ruben Poucan, CEO of GoodGist. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the remarkable effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.